Right now, the most powerful multi-million-dollar supercomputers on Earth are burning just, well, massive amounts of electricity to do one thing, and that's multiply the number zero.
Yeah.
And they are doing it millions of times a second.
Yeah.
I mean, I want you to imagine that invisible engine powering every AI system, you know, every deep learning model, and every massive fluid dynamic simulation you interact with today.
Right, the whole back end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At the absolute bedrock level, it is just one mathematical operation happening on a loop, matrix multiplication.
It's the foundation of modern computing, really. But as you pointed out, it's deeply inefficient.
Yeah.
Because the classical hardware accelerators we rely on, so think about the tensor cores in modern GPUs or TPUs, they are designed to optimize for raw brute force throughput.
Right. They just push numbers.
Exactly. They are built to blindly churn through full dense matrices, even when a huge percentage of the information inside those matrices is, well, it's highly redundant at zeros or close to it.
Which brings us to the sources we're looking at for today's deep dive. We've got this fascinating text file simply titled ALC.txt, which introduces something called adaptive linear compression, or ALC.
Yep.
And the mission of this deep dive is to explore how ALC solves this massive computing bottleneck. But it doesn't do it just by, like, writing sleeker code. It actually borrows a profound concept from physics.
Which is wild.
It is. Specifically, it reduces entropy by literally collapsing matrices.
We are looking at a complete paradigm shift here. I mean, the core question ALC asks is, what if our computers could act more like natural physical systems?
Yeah.
What if, instead of brute forcing every single calculation, they could organically sense where the actual information lives and only invest energy where it actually matters?
Okay, so let's unpack this, because before we can fix matrix multiplication, the text argues that we have to fundamentally rethink what a matrix actually is.
Yeah, we have to zoom out a bit.
Right. We are moving out of computer engineering for a second and into some really interesting philosophical territory.
Well, the source material draws on a framework. Fundamental insight they present there is this equation, basically stating that intelligence equals work invested to collapse entropy.
Intelligence equals work invested to collapse entropy. I mean, it's such a compelling way to frame it.
It really is. And if you apply that lens to linear algebra, you have to, like, stop seeing a matrix as just a static grid of numbers.
Oh.
Instead, you start viewing a matrix as a theory.
A theory.
Yeah, a theory. It has an underlying mathematical structure called a singular value distribution, which the text refers to as its stationary structure.
Right.
And its rank, you know, the number of independent dimensions of data it actually holds, that rank represents what they call the attractor modes.
The attractor modes.
Right. Those modes are the signals carrying the essential information, while literally everything else is just noise.
Mm.
High entropy fluff.
So to find those attractor modes, you need something called a singular value decomposition, or SVD. And the text refers to the full SVD as the missing information. But, I mean, doing a full SVD on a massive data set takes an enormous amount of computing power, right?
Oh, absolutely. It does. A full SVD would perfectly reconstruct the matrix. But ALC asks a totally different question. It asks, what if we just don't need absolute perfection?
Right. What if close enough is good enough?
Exactly. Instead of computing every single redundant number, we can pay with a very small amount of upfront computation to find a low-rank approximation.
Okay.
We are essentially doing a tiny bit of work to collapse the matrix's entropy down to a tolerable margin of error, just stripping away the noise before we ever start the heavy multiplication.
Let's make this concrete for everyone listening. Think of a standard dense matrix, like a 1,000-page textbook.
Sure.
It's heavy, it takes forever to read, and it has a very high level of entropy, meaning lots of filler words, repeated examples, and, you know, just fluff.
Right. And if you've ever studied for a final exam, you know you don't need all 1,000 pages to actually understand the core concepts.
Exactly. So the theory, or the attractor modes we were talking about, those are like the 5-page cliff notes at the back of the book.
Yes. Those 5 pages contain 99% of the actual knowledge required to pass the test.
So with ALC, we're basically choosing to spend a little bit of mental energy up front to search the index and find those cliff notes.
Right.
And we do that so we don't have to lug the heavy 1,000-page book around all semester.
That captures the goal perfectly. I mean, we want the cliff notes, but the real engineering challenge is the timing.
Because it's happening so fast.
Exactly. How do you find those cliff notes on the fly millions of times a second without slowing down the computer even more than if you had just, you know, multiplied the full matrices to begin with?
Which brings us to the actual algorithm. And the text outlines a three-phase process to pull this off.
Right, the three steps.
Phase one is rank profiling, or entropy estimation. This is where the system tries to estimate how much fluff is actually in the data. And to do this, ALC uses a randomized rangefinder. But wait, drawing a random Gaussian matrix?
Mm-hmm.
Are we just guessing the entropy and hoping we don't accidentally throw away important data?
I know, it sounds crazy.
I mean, if this is powering a self-driving car's vision system, random guessing sounds genuinely terrifying.
It sounds incredibly counterintuitive to rely on randomness for, like, precision mathematics, but this is the beauty of probabilistic numerical linear algebra.
Okay.
It's not a blind guess at all. To understand how it works, you have to think about high-dimensional space.
Right.
If you throw random vectors into a matrix with thousands of dimensions, the sheer vastness of that mathematical space means those random vectors are almost guaranteed to be orthogonal or, you know, completely independent from each other.
So by throwing this random net over the data, the math basically guarantees we catch the widest possible spread of information without having to check every single data point individually.
Precisely. So the algorithm draws a much smaller random Gaussian test matrix. It multiplies that test matrix against the giant original matrix to create a tiny sketch of the data, which the text calls matrix Y.
Okay. And the sources mention that it then performs a QR decomposition on matrix Y to get an orthonormal basis. I'm going to need a quick breakdown of orthonormal basis.
Sure. Think of it like finding the absolute true north, south, east, and west of our data structure.
The core directions.
Right. We are isolating the pure independent directions the data is moving in and stripping away all the overlapping messy angles.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. And once we have that clean directional map, it projects that back to create an even tinier matrix called B. Finally, it runs a singular value decomposition on that tiny matrix.
Because matrix B is so small now.
Exactly. The compute cost is completely trivial at that point. But mathematically, the singular values you extract give you a near exact profile of the giant original matrix.
But wait, if we have to constantly pause a neural network to calculate this profile, aren't we just losing all the time we supposedly saved?
You would think so, but that's why they utilize what the text calls a double buffered incremental QR update.
Double buffered.
Right. It essentially runs on a parallel track. Mm. The profiling happens in the background, continuously updating its estimate of the entropy without ever pausing the main computation stream.
Okay, so phase one guarantees we have an accurate real-time map of where the fluff is.
Yep.
But knowing the fluff is there doesn't actually remove it. How does the system decide exactly where to make the cut without destroying the underlying simulation?
That brings us to phase two, which is the collapse threshold or rate distortion optimization.
Right.
This is where ALC behaves very much like a high-end data compression algorithm. It calculates a collapse potential, which represents exactly how much memory and compute time you will save by truncating the matrix down to a specific rank.
But it has to balance that against the distortion it's creating. Right?
Yes, absolutely. And distortion here isn't just some generic concept. The algorithm measures it specifically as the Frobenius norm of the error matrix.
Which means what, in practical terms? Like for the non-mathematicians out there.
The Frobenius norm essentially acts as a strict mathematical penalty. It measures the sum of the absolute squares of the differences.
Okay.
So if you compress an image matrix, it calculates a harsh penalty for every single pixel that gets blurred or altered. The algorithm is constantly scanning for the sweet spot.
The sweet spot being?
The rank that maximizes the information gained per memory unit while keeping that Frobenius error incredibly low.
And to control that sweet spot, the text highlights a regularization constant called the lambda factor.
Right.
They give an example of setting lambda to 10 to the negative 6th power.
That lambda factor acts as a hard budget. It tells the system, you know, do not let the error exceed this tiny threshold under any circumstances, but compress the matrix as much as mathematically possible up to that line.
Okay, so we have our profile from phase one, and we found our perfect threshold in phase two.
We've got the map.
We have the blueprint to collapse the entropy. Now, the execution. Phase three is where the text introduces the compressed multiplication and where this theoretical elegance turns into a massive hardware win.
Yeah, this is where it all pays off. In a standard matrix multiplication, you just smash the entirety of matrix A into matrix B.
Right.
It requires enormous computational power, and it just maxes out your memory bandwidth entirely. But in phase three, ALC factors matrix A and matrix B into skinny, low-rank matrices. The text calls them L and R transposed.
And instead of one giant calculation, the operation becomes a three-step pipeline.
It does. You compute the inner product of the R factor of A and the L factor of B first, and then multiply the outer components.
Let's bring in another analogy here, because visualizing factors and transposes can get, well, pretty abstract.
Oh, definitely.
Think of standard matrix multiplication, like shipping frozen concentrated orange juice. Matrix A and B are like shipping millions of gallons of heavy, watery orange juice across the country.
And you definitely don't want to pay a fleet of trucks to slowly haul mostly water from coast to coast.
No.
Your memory bandwidth is basically that fleet of trucks.
Right. So phase three is the extraction process.
Yeah.
ALC extracts just the pure, dense orange syrup.
The core information.
Exactly. Those are your L and R factors.
Mm-hmm.
We ship that syrup incredibly quickly and cheaply using far fewer trucks, and then we only add the water back, doing the final outer multiplication exactly when and where we need to drink it.
That is a brilliant way to visualize it, and the hardware implications of dealing only with that syrup are staggering.
Yeah.
The middle part of that three-step pipeline creates a very small core matrix. And the source material highlights this as a massive win called systolic reuse.
Systolic reuse. Break that down for us. Why is that specific term so critical here?
To understand why it's critical, you really have to look at how microchips are physically built. The most expensive operation a processor does isn't actually doing the math.
Oh, really?
No, it's fetching the data from the main offboard memory. It's like a mechanic having to drive across town every single time they need a different wrench.
Wow.
But a processor also has ultra-fast on-chip memory, the L1 cache, and the internal registers. That's the workbench right in front of the mechanic.
So because this core matrix, the syrup, is so remarkably small, it never has to leave the workbench.
Exactly. It stays entirely inside the processor's fastest memory. By keeping the dense information on chip, you practically eliminate the off-chip memory traffic.
Which is the real bottleneck.
Right, which is the true bottleneck in modern AI hardware.
So we have the theory, but does it actually work in practice?
Always the big question.
Right. The text includes something called a fair pure Python benchmark. I love that they ran this in pure Python, bypassing all the highly optimized C libraries, just to prove that the raw underlying math holds up on its own.
The results are quite definitive, honestly.
They tested a 200 by 200 matrix with an effective rank of 10, doing it the ordinary way, you know, forcing the computer to churn through the entire dense matrix took 0.7 to 8 seconds.
Right.
When they applied the ALC algorithm, it took 0.064 seconds.
That translates to a 12.1mx speedup.
A 12-times speedup. And the relative error was 1.15 times 10 to the negative 5. It was practically flawless.
It's amazing.
They got the exact same mathematical result 12 times faster simply by mapping out the fluff and refusing to multiply it.
And if you look at how this performance scales, I mean, the implications grow even larger. For typical real-world matrices where the effective rank is much smaller than the overall dimensions, the source notes that efficiency gains can reach 10x to 100x in both memory savings and execution time.
We've seen the mechanics. We've seen the 12x speedup and the hardware optimization. But I want to loop back to the beginning of this deep dive.
Sure.
Why build it this way? Because saving clock cycles is great, obviously. But the section titled Relation to ODC, CT, and XY Flow suggests a much deeper motivation.
Yeah, if we connect this back to the bigger picture, the authors didn't just stumble into a clever software trick.
Right.
This algorithm was intentionally designed to mimic the rules of the physical universe.
That lambda factor we talked about earlier, the hard budget for the Frobenius error.
Yeah.
The text explicitly states that lambda is literally an entropy collapse condition.
To understand why that phrasing really matters, we have to look at what happens during the truncation process.
Okay.
Remember, the singular values represent the stationary essential components of the matrix. When ALC cuts the matrix off at that lambda threshold, throwing away the redundant data,
right,
the text says it is discarding probability modes. These are mathematical dimensions that carry very little energy or actual information. It leaves behind only the stationary structure.
And the text actually refers to the final product of this multiplication as an attractor. It describes the act of matrix multiplication not just as a calculator spitting out a number, but as a system prompt that guides the entire trajectory of the computation.
This raises a fascinating question, though. Where else do we see probability modes collapsing into stationary attractors based on a physical threshold?
Yeah.
The text directly compares this computational process to quantum mechanics.
Bang.
Specifically, an electron's wave function collapsing to a lower dimensional orbital.
That is wild to think about in the context of computer code.
In quantum physics, an electron exists in this high entropy cloud of probabilities. It's everywhere and nowhere.
Right.
But when an observation or interaction occurs, it is forced to collapse into a specific stable state, a stationary attractor.
An EALC algorithm is doing the exact same thing to our data.
Exactly. The giant input matrices are a cloud of high entropy mathematical possibilities. By applying the lambda threshold, the algorithm forces the computational energy to collapse only into the most stable information-dense state.
So it isn't just a cute metaphor for a computer science paper. ALC is mathematically mirroring physical laws to save computing power.
The source material argues that by linking real-time entropy profiling with physical error bounds, they have created something entirely new. They refer to it as a self-aware computational graph.
A self-aware computational graph. That's intense.
It literally feels the structural difficulty of the matrix it is processing. If the data is highly complex, it spends more energy. If the data is mostly zeros and redundancy, it relaxes. It operates identically to a natural physical system finding the path of least resistance.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Let's summarize the journey we just took.
Good idea.
We started with the absolute biggest bottleneck in modern AI,
yeah.
The brute force movement of massive amounts of redundant data just to multiply matrices.
Right.
And we solved it by completely reframing matrices, not as static grids, but as theories containing high entropy fluff and low entropy knowledge.
We explored a precise three-step mechanism, using probabilistic math to profile the data's entropy on the fly,
yep.
Finding the perfect Frobenius threshold to collapse that entropy without losing the signal, and executing a compressed three-part pipeline to keep all the heavy lifting on the fastest parts of the microchip's cache.
And the result was a staggering 12-time speedup, inspired directly by the way quantum wave functions collapse in the physical world.
It's incredible.
As AI models continue their exponential growth scaling from billions to trillions of parameters, we are hitting a very real physical limit on this planet. We cannot simply keep building larger power plants to multiply zeros.
No, we really can't.
Algorithms like ALC that treat computation like a physical ecosystem rather than a brute force calculator are the only way we will be able to run the technology of the future without requiring the energy output of a small star.
It represents the ultimate interception of hardware-software co-design. I mean, we are finally building algorithms that respect the physical reality of the microchips they run on by acting like physics themselves.
It is a massive leap forward.
Yeah.
And it leaves me with one final thought I want you to mull over as you go about your day. We are building computer algorithms that achieve maximum efficiency by perfectly mimicking the way quantum wave functions collapse in nature. At what point does a neural network stop being a piece of clever mathematical software and start functioning exactly like a synthetic physical universe?